This podcast is sponsored by Athletic Greens. Now, you've probably heard of Athletic Greens from 1,000 different podcasts, and the reason why I believe is because it works. This is something I've been using every single day, and the biggest things that I've realized for myself is that I have more energy, I rarely if ever get sick, my poops are better, okay? There's multiple benefits here, and if you are interested in trying it, I have a free one-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 AG1 travel packs by using the link drinkag1.com/Farzad. And my gut tells me, no pun intended, that you're going to love this product. Now onto the podcast. Were you guys surprised by the announcement of them morphing the existing line with Unboxed? Was that a surprise to you guys? I was shocked. I was not expecting that at all.
It was, but it also gave me some peace of mind. When I come on here, do my episodes, you know, I don't necessarily talk about all the things that I'm worried about, but you know, there's definitely part of me that's been worried about them going to this whole new way of building a vehicle. I mean, let's just look at the past, right? Whole new way of doing solar roofs. Well, that's taken quite some time. Whole new way of building batteries. Well, that's taken quite some time. Even just look at this Model 3 refresh. That's taken some time, right? It's like Dojo. Well, that's taken some time. I mean, these are revolutionaries rethink from the ground up on how things are done, and it takes time. You throw that into a new assembly method, a new assembly line or parallel line. Does that take longer than we expect? And so this actually gave me a peace of mind thinking like, okay, they are taking a few more steps, de-risking, moving faster. And I think that, I don't know, that gives me more confidence in it. So I'm happy about it, but I did not see that coming.
I'm surprised to hear you were worried.
Well, people talk about being an echo chamber, and you know, I talk about a lot of things I'm optimistic about, and those are things I tend to like to think about and talk about. I don't necessarily talk about all my fears, whether it's Tesla or not Tesla, you know. But yeah, I mean, like if you were to ask me, like, put a bear case for Tesla, yeah, I can absolutely do that. And that would be one of them, is that, well, you know, they have a history of doing things, but tends to be late. Are they revolutionary? Yeah. Does it always come on time? No. Do we get unexpected issues? Yeah. I mean, like, you know, these are facts, you know, with great innovation, great rethink of architectures and processes comes a lot of risk and a lot of delays.
I take the complete opposite stance of that, but I want to hear what Hans wants to say.
Well, I would agree. Actually, I had a lot of the same concerns. Like, if you look at the 4680, whole new way to make batteries, and it's taking so long, it's so slow. And the Unbox process, you know, it's that level for making cars. And so, you know, I think before the call, there was a reasonable concern, an argument to be made that, okay, Elon is going to cancel all of the, you know, Reuters is right. Elon's going to cancel the consumer cars. We're just going to go balls to the wall for autonomy, which means that the next car we make is going to be pure robo-taxi. We're removing the safeguards and we're just going all out, whatever happens. And then we're going to hit regulatory issues, and we're going to hit Unbox process manufacturing issues. So we're not going to be able to make them fast enough. We're not going to be able to deploy them in a way that makes money. Like, you know, there was I wouldn't call that a likely scenario, but that was a scenario that you could assign some probability to and be somewhat concerned about. After the call, that entire possibility has just been like taken out back, shot and buried.
Well, I was just going to ask you, besides Giga Shanghai, you tell me one thing, one product they've done, one thing they've done that's a complete architecture rethink that came out early, no problems.
Model Y with castings.
That's not a complete rethink.
Castings?
And Shanghai wasn't a rethink either.
Castings, sure, but you're coming off of the Model 3, and the Model 3 was already starting to use bigger casted parts, which allowed them to go into
I am so surprised to hear two super long-term thinking investors be worried about the timing of a groundbreaking technology that's going to completely revolutionize how to make a car. What are you guys, like, bears now? Am I talking to, like, Ross and Gordon Johnson right now? What's going on?
That's not what we said.
What is this?
That's not what we said.
That's literally what you said. You said, I was worried that the timing of this thing was going to be bad.
No, not what I said. What I was saying is there was a concern, right? There's a concern of it. It doesn't mean I thought that would be the case. I'm always
You were worried about timing, though.
No. I'm worried about what we don't know. And what I'm saying is by them taking this approach, that's less of it. That's always going to be a concern. No matter what it is, that's always going to be a concern. Not the timing. It's
more. Bro, isn't this what Tesla is from the very beginning? Isn't this like literally Tesla? Aren't they doing this with absolutely everything? Everything that they do is by default something that people haven't done before in that way. I'm just really surprised to hear that this alleviated your concerns that much. Like we shouldn't be surprised by the move then. Because maybe I'm like an insane person. Like I'm in La La Land.
Does that mean you're upset?
I'm upset about what?
That they're not going straight to Unbox?
No, I'm not upset about it. I just wasn't necessarily worried about it. If anything, they are then moving up the timeline of using the current line. All it really does, it just puts to ease, right, the fears of the market that was concerned about a cheaper car not coming, right? I was not concerned about the cheaper car not coming. I was fully accepting that whenever this car comes, it could be next year, the year later, could be 2028 for all I care. But the fundamental premise of this cheaper vehicle, whatever line it's made, is that literally nobody else can do this at a profit. And nobody else can make them in millions of units per year. And nobody can put self-driving technology on it, you know? But the fact that you're both on this bear camp now... Okay.
Let me articulate. At least for me, I didn't have any doubts about the long term, like, because at the end of the day, it's the future is dependent on robotaxis and it's dependent on Optimus. So I did like I want to see us succeed in both of those areas, and I everything that I see tells me that we are going to succeed in those two areas. So I'm not necessarily concerned about that long term future. I was somewhat wondering how much pain is there going to be between here and there. And that's the only thing. Like now I feel like we're going to have very little pain. Is like before I thought there could be quite a bit of volatility and choppiness, which is fine. Like I've ridden out lots of volatility and choppiness all over the place in the history of my investments in Tesla. So that wasn't necessarily something that was going to cause me to, you know, lose faith in the name or to sell a bunch of my position or anything. But it's nice to know that I don't think that it's going to be, you know, a replay of 2018 any worse than we are today.
Let me take this back to 2022. Farzad and I had maybe our second ever stream together, interview, whatever you want to call it. I was telling him that I think Tesla's going to come out with a robotaxi and not a cheaper model. I told him that I think the 25,000 vehicle is just a robotaxi. And Farzad told me, no way. They won't have FSD ready for India and all this stuff. And so it's not like you're never worried about timing either. You were worried about timing back then.
I'm not worried about timing. I'm not. Me being confident about a strategy doesn't imply that I'm worried about timing. You literally said that you were worried about the timing of the compact car. Word for word.
Let's go back court? And check it. What is this?
Replay the tapes.
Yeah.
But let's get back on topic here. What I'm saying is the fact that they're de-risking the possibility and shifting left the time schedule, I think is bullish. So was I expecting this be the case? No. Does it make me more confident? Yes.
Okay. So okay, so I'm on the same page with that statement now that you flip-flopped on what you said earlier. So, okay, no, but okay, seriously. So why do you think they did that? Because I think the why, one of the theories out there that I'm, and I think this probably has a lot of validity to it, is that Tesla has recognized that they have a little too much capacity built out for what the market demands from an EV for the next 2 to 3 years. And them moving up this cheaper vehicle platform wasn't necessarily a, we're going to do this because we want to. It's like, we need to do this because otherwise we're going to have idle capacity. It was actually brought on by that variable instead of them thinking they had enough runway to get to the Gen 3 car. How do you guys read that? Since you guys were so worried about this compact car not coming.
Yeah, Nick disagrees with you. He thinks that you're dumb. So I want to hear what he has to say about that.
Oh, well, what I was going to say is maybe this is me wanting drama in my own head. So in my imagination, the way this movie went was Elon was like, you know what, guys? No, we are not going to do on the same line. We're just going to go forward with the robotaxi. That's what we're going to do. Because I imagine that trying to do two vehicles, one line with the exact same process started slowing down the robotaxi. I think that might've been what would happen. And I could see Elon saying, we're wasting too much on this. FSD is progressing fast. We are behind on developing the robotaxi. We need to move faster now. We can still do this, what you're talking about. I'm sure part of what you're saying is also accurate, Farzad. But I can see them saying, like, look, we're going to have gigacastings regardless. We already have these lines set up. Can we get more efficiency out of these? You know, we already have these machines, these processes we did to stamp out the doors and to do this and that for the unbox. We don't need to have to hold the unbox today. Let's just iterate, change the lines we have now. Let's get done with this. Skunkworks team, you got 6 months to figure this out. And team who's doing the unbox process, forget about the other car, focus on the robotaxi. You're slowing down. You have 6 months now. I think it probably was more along something like that.
Yeah, I think that there's some validity to that. And really, I mean, the way that I would summarize it is just CapEx efficiency. That in order, like, we don't want to have to spend, you know, billions and billions and billions of dollars down on our war chest in order to build out all this capacity for the robotaxi when we can just modify what we have and get more, like, be more resource efficient in this transition and in the process, like Jeff Lutz has been saying, really give the supply chain a chance to ramp up to the types of volumes with a whole lot of parts that are new. That, you know, that's been one of the, going back to what we were talking about earlier, one of the things that I was just curious, how the heck is Tesla going to ramp up? You know, we're putting 48 volt architecture and steer by wire in the Cybertruck. If we're only at 250,000 units worth of Cybertruck delivery run rate, when they're trying to bring up this next generation vehicle, and the next generation vehicle platform is supposed to sell 4 million plus units a year. You know, there's a big gap between 250,000 units a year and 4 million units a year. How do you ramp that supply chain smoothly in a reasonable amount of time? Like, that seems like a really difficult challenge, like probably as difficult, if not more difficult, than a lot of the engineering challenges inside the factory. And so I think this plan really de-risks the supply chain end of things, which people don't think about and is so complex. And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the things that, to add to what Nick was saying, that slowed things down is they started making all these plans for Mexico and there were parts of the supply chain that they were trying to secure for ramping up this unbox process in Mexico. And they just kept hitting walls, be like, talking to this supplier, that supplier, and this supplier for, and my guess is it's for some of the brand new parts that have never been used before. And they're just like, no, there's no way that we can achieve those types of volumes on the time frame that you want us to hit them. And, you know, if that's the case, well, then there's no point in getting the factory started and getting it built, because you absolutely do not want to build that machine and then have it starved for parts and just burning cash like nobody's business. And so I think that it all just boils down to CapEx efficiency and all of the things that they discovered when they're trying to figure out how do we scale from 3 million, you know, 2 million units a year this year to 7 or 8 million units a year several years from now. No, like there's just like the plans that we had to move from here to there weren't possible. And so we had to just change. Like we're still going to get to roughly that same endpoint in roughly the same amount of time, but we're going to have to change how we're getting there.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. I think what's additionally interesting about the Gen 3 platform, like the ground up way they're going to do it, is that if I remember correctly on the deck and on the call, Tesla said that the Robotaxi, what the Cybercab, whatever the hell this thing is, that's still going on this Gen 3. But for you to have a launch of Robotaxi in the next 12 months, you don't need that many units. So like that line could also be running at a low quantity to start and making these Cybercab Robotaxis that might make $50,000 to $80,000 per year of revenue because they're doing ride hailing. And all of a sudden you could have a very inefficient line start making money right away too. So like that's one of the things that breaks the equation as well. So you don't necessarily need the usual supply chain efficiency and manufacturing efficiency you need for a line to make money as long as you're actually generating revenue. So it's like the first year or two could be like Waymo, but you actually have a Waymo that at least breaks even. And then as the technology ramps up, you could start turning a lot more profit as you get more units out there and you make the line more efficient. It is, okay, so do you guys think this cheaper car on the hybrid line, is that still a $25,000 compact or do you think it's something else?
You go first this time.
Okay. I think it's cheaper and I think it probably compact. I don't know if it's quite $25,000. I would probably $25,000 after federal tax incentives. One of the things that they said on the call that when you think about it is actually very exciting is that, you know, they said they have all of these battery suppliers. They didn't end up needing to ramp up 4680 because they have all of this cell supply that's available to them. Think about one of the advantages that they have if they did ramp up 4680 that they don't have otherwise, unless that other cell supply is in the US. And that is, you know, they're manufacturing these cells in the US. They have access to not only, you know, the IRA $7,500 off the purchase price for qualifying vehicles, but then all of the credits that they make on, you know, on the materials and the battery manufacturing side of that. So like that's a lot of money on the table if they just go crazy with 4680 manufacturing. The fact that they're not going crazy with 4680 manufacturing tells me there's some other factors that they're weighing in the decision. And what I'm wondering is if they're looking at a whole bunch of US cell supply coming online that was supposed to go to GM and Ford and all these other companies, and they're actually going to have IRA eligible batteries for these cars that they're going to be coming out with next year. And so we could see, you know, a two-door version of the Model 3 in a hatchback. Like, I can't stop thinking about the two-door hatchback version of the Model 3 Performance with IRA compatible batteries.
Forget
that. That thing would be nuts. It would be insane. Like, because, you know, they're already saying that the Model 3 Performance is just a complete smackdown on the BMW M3. Now take that and shrink it by several hundred pounds and put it on a slightly shorter wheelbase. Cause you could, you know, if you do structural castings front and rear for that, you can just shrink the battery pack that goes in between those two castings a little bit. You're going to have to, you know, have whole new body side outers for the sides, but that's something that should be relatively easy to do. And they can still use essentially the same front, do a modification on like a Model Y rear for the hatch. And it would be an incredible vehicle. And so then you start your ramp with that, and then you move down to a more affordable version that's not a performance. And like that would set the performance automotive world on fire. Like, you're talking about something that would destroy an old Subaru WRX all day long, every day, and at a price point that, you know, would come in well under probably the Civic Type R.
Yeah, so I want to go right into that, but I like the conversation about the batteries. The way I look at it with the batteries, it's almost, let me say this out loud, I don't know if this analogy works, but it's like if you buy a house, you could buy it in cash if you have the money, and then your capital is all locked up and you used your cash. Or you could take a mortgage out, once upon a time rates were good, and use your cash as a, you know, as a safety blanket to invest in. You have more optionality. I feel like with the batteries right now, Tesla would be foolish not to be soaking up everything out there on the market. Why would I use my 4680s right now? That's always my backup plan. I got down the back burner. That's going to be there, ready to go when I need it. In the meantime, let me eat up everything that's out there right now at a more cost effective, and I can instead take that CapEx, put it to something else right now, and we can still continue to do what we're doing, but there's no need to go balls to walls on that right now when we have all this other supply out there. Like, that seems like a no-brainer to me.
Especially since it stimulates like the growth of that overall supply chain and ecosystem overall right now. That, you know, the more that other people develop battery supply for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, the more there will be total.
Yeah. And you're killing the competition, which at this point, I'm all for it. I know everyone's like, oh, we need everybody to win and all that. I'm not that person. I want them all to go by the wayside, personally. Anyways,
I'm good. I'm getting on that boat, honestly, personally. I used to be much more like, I want everybody to win. But like Ford's latest earnings, have you seen them?
Yeah, of course.
Their revenue is down 84% because they had to take a giant cut on their pricing. And they ship less, and I think they ship 10,000 EVs to dealers because their lots are so overrun. They had $1.3 million of billion dollars of cost, and they made $100 million in revenue.
Yeah, it's
a joke. It's a joke.
We got to stop this crap. I mean, I don't know, I don't want to get into the government, but just this wasteful spending and incentivizing lack of hard work or lack of moving fast or lack of innovation. We just got to stop that in general. But as far as what this is going to look like, we're going to know on 8/8. I mean, Elon, that's how I heard the call. He was saying, you'll find out on 8/8 on what it's going to look like. So I'm kind of hoping that we see a certain body exterior that, I mean, they're all the same underpinnings, right? Same way they're going to do all these. But I hope Europe has its own version. I hope China has its own version. I hope the States has its own version. And there's no reason not to, right? Because to Han's point, all you're changing is the outers, right? So if you can do that, but all the underpinnings are the same, I mean, that'd be pretty awesome. But I also don't know what I don't know, so I'm trivializing.
The most interesting part of this, though, of leveraging the existing lines and just not having to dump all this CapEx and stuff, is that Model Y and 3 will benefit from this too, right? Because you are pushing the metal through the same lines that your most profitable cars are going through right now, and now you're adding a different thing that's not going to bring the total the fixed cost is going to be spread over 3 million plus units instead of 1.8, 2 million units. So then your Model Y and 3 costs will come down. And then you have the FSD layer on top of it as it gets better and the unsupervised version comes out. So that's more and more profit. I still feel like Tesla could very much come out with a $25,000 compact that maybe doesn't cost $20,000 to make, maybe costs $25,000 or $28,000 to make, but they'll still make a profit on a $25,000 car because they'll be able to upsell FSD. I think that's maybe one of the gambles that they're taking here, is that they're like, okay, we know FSD is here. We know that if we do the hybrid existing line and the Gen 3 line, we're not going to get the cost down to where we want it to be. But if FSD is live and people sign up for it, the cost that we miss out on will recoup in a year or two after people sign up for the software. And so as they move away from the hybrid line to the Gen 3 line, you still same the same car, but when you shift over to the full Gen 3 line, you bring the cost down, but you keep the price where it's at. So maybe it's almost like a loss leading effort where to start, and you know, you come out with a performance model, but you could theoretically come out with an even cheaper model and still make money on that because of FSD. So does that make sense?
It does. Can we talk about what I think is kind of the elephant in the room?
Yeah.
I'm pulling it up right now. We have updated our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new models ahead of to accelerate the launch of new models. Okay, so that's a new models ahead of previously communicated start production 2025. These new vehicles, so saying they're new, include more affordable models, will utilize aspects of the next generation platform as well as aspects of our current platform, and will be produced on the same manufacturing lines and current vehicles. So when you read this, do you, because Elon, now maybe this is just because he doesn't like him, but when Tony Saganaki or whatever his name is, asked, are these new vehicles or are these iterations on the existing vehicles, meaning are they like a slight trim difference, you know, like taking things out, like how did you guys read this? Because I'm seeing a lot of back and forth on this, and honestly, when I first read this, I was like, this is kind of awkward to read. Now I'm reading it back for the third time, and I'm like, okay, well, no, that seems pretty straightforward. This literally says new models. But
can I play it real quick? Can we listen to it together? Is that okay?
Oh my, are you that good?
What do you mean?
Dude, oh my God, you have it ready to go.
Well, no, I gotta find it. But we're recorded. Okay, yeah. It will take like a couple minutes to find, but.
Yeah. Thank you for taking the question. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit more on kind of the new vehicles that you talked about today. Are these like tweaks on existing models, given that they're going to be running on the same lines, or are these like new models, and how should we think about them, you know, in the context of like the Model 3 Highland update? What will these models be like relative to that? And given the quick time frame, you know, Model 3 Highland has required a lot of work and a lot of retooling. Maybe you can help put that all in context. Thank you. And I have a follow-up, please.
I think we've said all we will on that front. So what's your follow-up?
Are you sure this is the part?
We just had it.
What do you mean? That was it? Okay.
Yeah.
We've said everything we've said from our part.
Yeah, but he chose not to answer that question, like at all.
Okay, so what's your takeaway from that? Help me understand the takeaway.
I mean, I'm not the only one. Like there's lots of videos out there that have talked about this, and we even talked about it right after the earnings. Are these new models, or is this just like a cheaper version of Model 3, cheaper version of Model Y, and they're just
essentially, it's new, like, models. So who's under the assumption that it's cheaper models of Model 3 and Y?
Well, the fact that Elon didn't answer it opens up the door for that speculation. Do you not agree, Hans? Like, do you not agree there's the
I think it's obviously new models. I mean, I would consider a two-door version of the Model 3 a new model. Like,
I agree.
It to me, the reason that he didn't answer the question is because it gets back to that line. No, this is not a product announcement call. Like if they say any more than the prepared remarks on this topic, then you're stealing thunder from the actual product announcement. I believe that we absolutely are going to get new product announcements, and hopefully all of that is on 8.8.
But so I think this is where the wording's weird on this. Bring that back up if you don't mind. There we go. These new vehicles, including more affordable models. So what?
Not like, limited to.
So like, yeah, it's like we could have a van. What are you saying here?
Yeah, we could have a full size, you know, a Model X that is finally a full size 8-seat SUV.
So are you speaking of it as maybe like they're coming out with cheaper trims for the existing lineup? Is that how you're reading new models?
That's how I'm reading Tony's question that Elon did not answer.
Well, yeah.
And I think I think when Elon doesn't answer that, which I mean, honestly, I wouldn't answer anything that naysayer from day one has asked me. Like, I wouldn't answer any of his questions.
Well, I think it's more like an Osborne concern, to be honest, because if he answers the question, it always points to cheaper models. And I find it hard to believe it's a cheaper trim. Like, what else could they do to the existing lineup to make it cheaper? They already have like rear wheel drive options with like limited range versus the longer range version. Like, what else would they do?
Less batteries.
Yeah, there's a lot of things actually. You know, all of the modules. So, you know, the way that I'm reading what Tesla's doing is they're adding a lot of the things that they talked about on shareholder day as far as components. So that's going to be your steer by wire. That's going to be your 48 volt architecture. A lot of the things that they talked about that were not necessarily the actual unboxed process of manufacturing. So it's still going to be painted like normal, but it's going to have new motors. It's going to have new internal components. And a lot of the stuff that they're putting inside is cheaper. So there is going to be cost savings below the Model 3s and Ys that they're delivering today. So I think that the Model 3 and Y next year will continue to drive cost out of that vehicle. It'll be a better vehicle and it'll cost less to make. And a lot of that cost savings is going to come from using those modules that are ultimately for the robotaxi. But then using all of that, they can also diversify into other like slight variations on form factor as well. I can't get away for if they're talking about cheaper new vehicles, not necessarily just a cheaper Model 3 and Y, that I think we're going to get a compact that is before the Cyber Cab.
So let me, I'm just thinking about it from an optics perspective. So you think during this Robotaxi unveil where Elon said that they'll talk more about these cheaper models, just clearly from the answers, like what we're going to, you know, we can't talk about it right now. We'll talk about it on 8-8. So you think they're going to show a cheaper trim of the 3 and Y and their Robotaxi? They're going to be like, hey, look at this Robotaxi thing. And because we were able to build this on a better line, here's a cheaper 3 and Y.
I'm not saying that's what I think. Don't make me the bear here. What is
I'm not
this?
Saying you. I'm just saying, okay, I'm putting it out there as a general question. Yeah.
I think Tony's question, something led him to asking that question. It said new models, it said including more cost effective models, whatever. But something led him to be like, well, what does this really mean? Because you're doing it on the same line. Are you just, to Han's point, right? I mean, you know, I'm going to share my screen again.
Why'd you unshare it? You stopped sharing.
Because I didn't realize I was still sharing. All right.
I know. Did you use StreamYard, bro?
All right. You see my screen? There you go. All right. So this is what we saw, right? Body paint, okay, assembly, right? So if we go through this and we think about this, everything here, this is unboxed method, or not here, but coming up here. They're talking about you paint, you disassemble, whatever. But with what Hans was saying, as far as the unboxed method, if we have the 48 volt architecture, and we have to steer by wire, well, then we can actually, I think, go right into this with the 3 and the Y. I think painting, you can still do it in the unboxed method way, but with the steer by wire, with the 48 volt architecture, it's much more kind of plug and play, if you will, in many aspects. So I can understand where, you know, if he hears that, I really wish it, there we go. I could see where, like, think about it. You got your castings. Okay, we could do that now. We can paint all these parts now, right? Like, what if this is the process? Like, literally, I mean, I know they're saying that this isn't exactly how it'd be, but the big thing we're missing here is, you know, the wiring harness, all the electrical system, the steering system, right? There's a lot of stuff that's missing here. But with the 48 architecture and steer by wire, it kind of takes care of all that, so you can actually execute what we have right here, what they've already shown us. So I can understand where Tony could be like, well, what do you mean by you're going to do the same thing? Is it literally just going to be the Model Y number three and Model 3 with steer by wire, 48 volt architecture, a few more plastic pieces, cheaper material on the seats, and boom, there's your car? One motor instead of, you know, two motors, less batteries, you know, cheaper set of rims. I mean, like, all these places you could cut costs. I think that's where he was going with it. Now, I'm not saying that's what I think, but for as far as that continues to make you guys think I'm thinking like this, but I can understand where he might be coming from. And if he's coming from that, others are, and the possibility that is what's going to happen. We don't know.
It very well could be that they are able to offer new trims or like cheaper variations of the Y and the 3 that have less costs associated to them because of the unbox process. But the one, can you share your deck again? The deck of the thing?
I can, because I'm prepared.
Thanks. Yeah, you're already sharing, buddy. You just got to get on the thing.
All right. Yep.
All right, there you go. These new vehicles, right? So, like, by default, these new vehicles on the second half of 2025, like, we update our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new vehicles, right? Of new models ahead of our previously communicated start of production. Okay, so updated our future vehicle lineup to accelerate the launch of new models ahead of our previously communicated start of production in the second half of 2025. So within that context, models already implies new vehicles, right? Because they're saying robotaxi compact car were the agreed upon new models that were going to come out in the second half of 2025. And then they said these new vehicles, including more affordable models, implies those same models are the cheaper ones that are going to come out like the compact car. So to me, it's much less the cheaper 3 and Y, and it is a compact car built on the same platform, on the same manufacturing line. That's how I'm reading it. Like, I don't think there's any room here for cheaper trims, in my opinion. Because if you remove batteries from the battery pack, doesn't that completely change the safety validation? Like, if you remove cells from the structural battery pack, right, of the giga cast, or like with the cast process, don't you have to re-engineer the entire car? Because then your load transfer in the battery pack changes. No,
you just have to manage the, like, you have to test the pack itself, and whatever your new pack is has to meet the exact same structural performance as your previous one did. That I wouldn't expect that to be a huge thing. But I don't think that the batteries is the main place that they're, you know, eliminating costs, unless you make the car a lot lighter. Like, they're still going to maintain range. So I think it's in other areas where they end up cutting cost, and, you know, they do make the vehicles. If you're getting 3 million, this is where I think at the end of the day, it was kind of a silly question, is because they said point blank, we expect to be getting closer to 3 million units a year run rate utilization out of our factories at the end of 25 than the 2 million ish that we'll have this year. So 50, you know, they basically said their 50% growth rate for 2025 over 2024. And so, you know, it's like, okay, why, Mr. Tony, are you so hesitant about, you know, our ability to deliver on this? And I mean, I guess I kind of get it from his standpoint that so far things have taken longer and been a little bit slower, but I don't know. I feel like the changeover to Highland was relatively easy. I don't know why he's using that as a point to say, hey, this is, I mean, it hasn't been flawless and completely smooth. But honestly, their production has been better than I expected for a changeover. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't need to waste any more time on that. I just, it was something that I've seen.
Yeah, thanks for wasting our time.
Talk about. So, I mean, honestly, you guys just made me feel even more confident that he's not onto something there. So that's great. Let me ask you guys a question now. As far as, let me take the mic over here. What do you guys think happened? I mean, Farza, we talked about this before the earnings call. Post earnings call now, we got a lot of new information. Do you guys think we're going to see a robotaxi network activate somewhere in the United States after 8/8?
And before when? Like, obviously, yes, sometime after 8/8. When's your end date?
Okay. All right. I don't know what it is today. I'm calling 8/8 like the event, after the event, like it, boom, we got some, like a date.
Oh, immediately. Date,
like, yeah. Like, is it like, yeah, gotcha. It starts now.
I do think they will, I don't know if they'll hit this target, but I think they will announce on 8/8 that they will launch ride hailing, autonomous ride hailing by the end of 2024 in at least one city. I think they will make that announcement on 8/8 for sure. Will they hit it? I don't know, but I think they will totally make that announcement. Okay. I really do feel like
before Hans answers his part of that, Farzad, if that happens, what do you think happens to TSLA? That's
not Tesla's financial advice, not, you know, investment advice, financial advice, etc. I don't think it does anything. I think it sells on the news. I think, okay, listen, this, maybe I'm jaded. I know. Nicholas is like freaking out right now.
That is such a crazy take.
Because the market, okay, so all the different, okay, so all the market participant podcasts that I listen to that are like quote unquote smart money, they're not convinced that running your own robotaxi network is profitable. Everybody, like, it was like, oh, the insurance costs are going to be too high. Managing your own fleet is going to be too expensive. People are not sold that a self-driving network is profitable. And I do not understand that. When the cost of manufacturing a self-driving car goes from $200,000 to $20,000-$25,000, how can it not be profitable? Like, I don't care if the insurance is five times more than a human. Who the fuck cares? How can it not be profitable when you're taking that many costs out of the system? And that's where I think most people are not convinced that's the case. So I think TSLA, the stock, I don't think it moves until it's on the P&L. Okay. I think Tesla needs to post it on the P&L. Yeah, I'm not yelling at you.
You're a bear. You're a bear. We get it. You're a bear. Hans. Start off with what you think happens as far as it launching, and then, depending on what you say here after 8/8, like, what do you think happens to the stock?
Yeah, I actually was thinking the exact same thing as far as launch by the end of the year. I would be surprised if they're launching directly after the event, but I would be pleasantly surprised. I like to prepare for the worst and then hope for the best. Then as far as the stock, I really think it depends on what the stock price is going into the event. Like, we could be way higher coming into 8/8 than we are today, potentially. Especially since we've got the earnings call for Q2. You know, I think there's a real potential. Yeah, between Elon's comp plan and like them doing a huge print of FSD revenues at the end of Q2, we could have a massive bump. And if we do have a massive bump, then I don't know how much it moves. If we're still sitting under 200 and they announce Robotaxi Network, I think it has a pretty significant positive impact. But, you know, if we're up in the $250 to $300 range, I don't know.
I think if they unveil a compact car on 8/8 and open reservations up, that will have a significantly bigger impact on the stock than anything Robotaxi related. Because it goes back to the market. The market still is not convinced that Tesla is an AI company. That Tesla is they don't think Tesla will be able to generate SaaS like margins. They don't believe that because they haven't seen it, you know. And every other every other time in Tesla's history, even in a environment where we had much lower interest rates than we do now. And so 2013, 2018, 2019, 2020, the only reason why the stock moved was because Tesla printed a surprise on the P&L. And in 2013, it was a profitable electric vehicle. And in 2019, it was consistent profitability on a mass market car that started around $35,000. That's the and then the stock reacted to those. So then I think what Tesla needs to do is they need to show the same exact thing, but with FSD, either through Robotaxi or through the through its existing fleet.
Okay, interesting.
You don't think so?
Yeah, let's flip it. What do you think?
I'm with you guys. I think on 8/8 we get a concrete date on when the network starts, and I think it'll be, you know, Q4 Q1, all right, end of 2024 or beginning of 2025. I don't think we're gonna have to wait for the actual Robo Cyber Cab to come out. I could be wrong, obviously. I think if they announce it and they announce a date and they say we are going to start off in all the cities that Tesla just had hiring jobs for to go out there and have testers, you know, Jacksonville, Miami, Houston, Dallas, Austin, which also happen to all be states that don't need special regulatory approval the way like California does. You know, I think the stock runs huge. I mean, I think people will be piling in so fast to get in. It'll be insane. It'll be old Tesla style. It'll be Nvidia style. And the reason I think that is because I don't think it has to be on the P&L, Farzad, because I think what people don't like to do is wait to see if something's going to happen, right? The same reason the stock jumped after we had our earnings call, not because we saw in the P&L, but because now we had a date when it was going to happen. Okay, so end of this year or first or Q1 of 2025. Now we know when we'll get this cheaper model.
But my pushback there is that that announcement is related to an
automotive
income stream that has already been proven, which is vehicles.
I mean, Uber's been proven.
Yeah, but Tesla hasn't proven that they can do it, right? Like, so yeah. Here's the thing. Like, this is the thing that I fight with. This is why I've given up on just having any faith in the market, truly, is that what's obvious to me, and I'm not saying I'm right, right? I don't think any of us are saying that we're right. We're just kind of talking about
stop it. You know what? Who's being the pussy now? All right. I am unequivocally saying that I am right, that Tesla will solve full self-driving. I'm telling you unequivocally right now that Tesla could offer a robotaxi service today. Okay. Would they have to put some guardrails and do some, you know, little finessing and beautification?
Yeah, sure. No left-hand turns, yeah.
But if they had to, they could do it today. No, maybe where you live, not where I live. Like, I'm telling you, they could do it. So, no, I'm unequivocally saying they will solve this. They will be the one to do it. We're talking semantics on dates and times.
What do you think the likelihood is that on 8/8, they will not only say, hey, we're going to launch the network, but they will say, hey, we are already operating this as an employee-only access service, that there will be Tesla employees who have been given rides to and from work via the rideshare app in autonomous vehicles?
It won't do anything.
Well, that wasn't his question. I think there's a really good chance. I think there's a good chance that they say something like that. Like, I'm sure they're internally doing Q&A and beta testing it themselves internally. I mean, just the way you would with any software deployment.
I agree. Yeah. Wait, can I show you guys something real quick, though? I just saw this show up. I got a notification for this. Tesla FSD is running in Europe, Germany, and Tesla's giving demos to regulators. That just broke about half an hour ago. And then Elon replied to it. We believe version 12 is ready for supervised FSD and left-hand drive countries. RHD will take a bit longer. So they think FSD 12 is ready. Right-hand drive. Yeah.
They already have 12.4 and they have 12.5 in existence, apparently, based on what Elon's been saying. Or maybe not 12.5. Maybe he's just forecasting. We don't know. But clearly, there's clearly what they have. I don't know. It's hard for me to, like, I can say this till I'm blue in the face, but Elon hit the nail on the head. I watch CNBC every morning and I'll hear Andrew Ross Sorkin, Beck Quick, Joe, I don't know why I don't, Joe Scarabo? Sorry, Joe, I don't know your name. I've been watching this show. Scarborough, yeah. I've been watching, I don't know. His name's Joe. I call him Joe. Else. Anyways, I've been watching them literally since I was in a sophomore in high school. I've watched it every morning. All right. All through college, everything. And they aren't stupid people. They're smart people. They're not like your normal mainstream media. They have disagreements, they have political biases, but there's a reason why Elon was willing to do an interview with Andrew, right? And Joe has already said that he's a fanboy when it comes to Elon, right? With everything he's doing with free speech and all that. But they're still skeptical, right? When Ron Barron was on there with Andrew, he was skeptical about when's it going to happen. And Ron's saying now, All this to say, like, I can sit here and talk about till I'm blue in the face. If you haven't tried it and if you're not driving it on the daily, I'm looking at you, Hans. But you get it. But
I'm
still
calling y'all pussies. I'm 100% convinced, and I don't even drive the thing.
But what I'm saying is, I'm telling you, I drive it every single day. It takes me everywhere, and it's so obvious. It's so obvious. It's just insanely obvious. It's like me sitting there saying, you know, I don't know, like, hey, I'm going to let go of this bottle and it hasn't hit the ground yet, but I'm telling you it's going to hit the ground. It's pretty damn obvious it's going to hit the ground.
But I think all three of us agree that it is super obvious, right?
You don't.
It is super. That's not what I'm saying. You son of a bitch. What I'm saying is the market does not believe it. That's what I'm saying. The market does not believe it and will not believe it until it's too late for them to realize it.
No.
And everybody who is in the car and trying it out, they will benefit from that clear missed opportunity by the market.
You're asking the wrong question. The question isn't, does the market... It's more of a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That's not Elon's book.
All right,
it's everybody's
go for
book.
It.
The right question is not, or the wrong question is, does the market value it? Does the market believe in it? Wrong question. The right question is, have the people who say they don't believe in it or they don't want to value it driven it? Have they been in it? Because I'm telling you, if you are in it, you will change your mind. And I don't mean one drive that Gary does with help me out.
Omar?
Not Omar. No.
Bradford
Ferguson. Yeah. Through Chicago, one drive on 12.2. I don't mean that. I mean, like, you're using it on a daily, because one drive can be great. One drive can be shitty. One drive can be just awkward because you're not used to it. Or, you know, every version has its own little idiosyncrasies that change slightly. And it takes a little, you know, a little bit for you to get used to it. But I'm telling you, when you drive it every single day for a week, it's just so obvious.
I agree. But I agree 1,000%. But what I'm saying is that even those people that are in those cars, like the people that would analyze and drive the market price on the company, I still feel very strongly that they could be in the car 24/7 and the car takes them around from point A to point B and they don't have to do anything. I still feel like they're not going to go out of their way to assign the value that the company deserves because they haven't seen the company actually post a profit with it. I just don't think it's going to happen. And I, like, for us, it's obvious because because like, we are willing to take the risk, right? They view it as a risk. They're like, oh yeah, this is amazing technology, but is everybody going to use it? What about all the people that are afraid to use it? What if there is some sort of accident and that's going to cause some sort of harm? What if it costs a lot more because of insurance? What if regulators are slow to adopt it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Because they don't work on the timeline of in 10 years, this is obviously going to be the thing. They work in a completely different timeline. Like that, and so that's where I come from. It's like this can be the most, and this is where market opportunities exist. This could be the most mind-blowing thing in the world, and it becomes increasingly obvious that it's going that route. But there's still going to be a significant portion of those smart people that you mentioned that are just simply not going to assign it the value it deserves. It's just, it doesn't matter until it becomes so obvious through the company printing the earnings, then they'll be willing to give it the value it deserves. All right, I don't think it matters.
All right, Gary. Hans, what do you think? We got bull bear debate here.
Gary Black, I have no idea. He is the perfect sort of thing, like the perfect person to follow if you want to understand how Wall Street thinks. He has been so insanely accurate for the last two years.
Just not on Tesla stock.
How they think incorrectly.
Yeah.
How to think in the way that Wall Street thinks.
But I can point to plenty of other people. I can point to plenty of other people who don't think like Gary who are on Wall Street.
Okay, so why is the stock 166?
Why?
Yeah.
I mean, you mean why is it the highest market cap out of any other auto company right now? Yeah.
Why? Pretty great. By that same logic, you're saying that Tesla could launch FSD right now, right? Like today, right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So what should the market cap be in a world where Tesla has launched FSD? Like they have Robotaxi right now. Higher than today, right?
Man, that's, yeah. If they launched it today, I would say we'd be marching back to all-time highs, yeah.
Right, but it's not. This is my point.
We haven't launched it yet.
But this is my point. But the point you're trying to make is that, hey, this is obvious. They can already do it today. And there's smart people out there that... And the right question is, there's not enough people in the cars driving them. That's the right question that actually moved the market. And my pushback to that is, I bet you a lot of them have, and they still will not drive the market up because they haven't seen it in the P&L. Because otherwise, it would be at all-time highs. Because we all agree that the technology is there.
Nah, because it's not just that. We got $7 trillion in money markets on the sideline. We're potentially in a recession. People don't really want to invest in companies right now that have high cost, that are very interest rate sensitive. I mean, like, there's lots of other things.
So I'm right.
It's not just... I'm saying it has nothing to do with FSD. It has nothing to do with valuing of FSD. There's more to it. And if you were right, then Ron Barron wouldn't be in it with his price target. Kathy Woods wouldn't have her price target. Dan Ives wouldn't be his bullet. Even Gary Black has a higher price target right now for Tesla than what it is currently. So today's price is irrelevant. Today's price is only as irrelevant as 2 seconds ago.
Okay. So I'm right.
No.
Hans just wants to argue.
So... I was just going to say that I have no idea when it's going to get recognized. And other than a very, very small portion of my portfolio, it won't matter. So I am going to be purchasing some Leaps. And for those Leaps, it's going to matter when. But other than that, I don't know. I think I do tend to just... From how I've looked at the stock and when the actual big parabolic upward moves were, it was almost always when a new product segment really proved out profitability. That's when we've seen that. And so it wouldn't surprise me if it takes us doing that, but I don't know that we have to release. This goes back to the other point that I've been saying for years. I don't think we have to make it all the way to Robotaxi or us to start earning a shitload of money on software. And as soon as we see a bunch of money on the bottom line from software, then I think that's the beginning of that next parabolic move. And so, you know, that's where I'm like, I don't know if that's going to be next quarter or the quarter after that or the quarter after that, but I'm pretty sure sometime in the next six quarters, that's going to be flowing through to the bottom line in a major way that really does cause the entire company to get re-rated.
That's a good point, Hans. Like Fars.
Fars. Okay. You can call me Fars. That's all right.
Is that a nickname you have?
Z.
I have so many nicknames, bro. This is the plight of having a name nobody can pronounce.
I want to know what Cindy calls you. That's what I'm going to call you.
Oh, no. Only she can call me that.
But what about that? They have $3.4 billion in deferred revenue. Like, does that
a lot of it is energy, though.
Is it? Oh.
Pretty sure.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you got me on that one.
Yeah. I got you on a lot of things, brother. I got you on this whole podcast. You're like, we just brought you on just so we could pick on you.
I don't know. All right. Mark my words, all right? You can timestamp this one. You can clown them if you want. Tesla will have a parabolic move because of FSD before it goes on the P&L. Not saying there won't be other parabolic moves in the future. Yeah,
done. I'll take that all day.
Yeah.
Because of
FSD. Hold on. Wait,
because of FSD.
Hold on. You owe me some beer.
You owe me some beer. Oh, no. I do. You're right. 100%.
Yeah, you lost our bet. So
can you send me your address?
When everyone's listening here and they think Farzad's right about everything, just remember he lost a bet to me already. I've never lost a bet to him.
I said I'm right in this entire podcast. Not everything. It's different.
Hans, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Farzad and I had a bet on what the stock will do the day after earnings.
I've had the IPA he said he's sending you, the hazy. It's really good. You'll enjoy it.
Good.
Yeah. I love how he always goes to Hans when I got him tied up.
Got me tied up. I just want to claim my burr.
I got you. Send me your address. DM me your address so I can send it.
I'll say it out loud now, so... Go ahead.
Let's dig into why. Like, you know, y'all drive it. For those people who don't have it, who are watching the podcast, and they're like, how are you so confident? Let's dig in. The thing that we know from what Elon has said is that they are, and this was a reply to a James Dalma conversation with Dave Lee. You know, James said that what we are seeing as the customers is it takes 3 to 6 months for that to get into our hands from one, the first training run is done. Once the internal team is starting to evaluate it and see what the progress is. So what Elon was driving when he gave us the FSD V12 preview back in August of last year, that is the software that we finally saw starting to get rolled out probably in February. That early build that had to go through 3 to 6 months worth of quality assurance. And that was trained before we got major increases in compute. Elon didn't say that we are not compute constrained until here just recently. And so, you know, this is where they were at. They had finally, in fact, in August, they hadn't even gone up to this level here. So Elon saw a version of FSD that he showed to the public that was probably trained somewhere in this area back when they had this much training.
I can't see your pointer.
Yeah, can you put your mouse on it just to show people?
You're going to have to do the entire screen.
It's too small. There you go.
Oh.
You got it. We can see it now.
You see my
pointer? It's too small.
Okay.
Get it?
So then now we're starting, you know, it's been a while. We're getting all these massive, you know, updates and releases. It's just like constant, you know, every 3 to 10 days we're getting new releases. And I think that those new releases that we're getting were trained now in this area where we had this 15 to 17,000 H100 equivalent GPUs. And then when Ashok said this is the beginning of the end, is when they started training with this level of compute. And I think that 12.4 is probably the first version that was trained as we started to go up this ramp. and that 12.5 is going to be another one of those. And all of this to say that, you know, we've seen, like I said, just new model after new model after new model in short time frames, that 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 10 days. And I think the longest one is still under 2 weeks. We're going to start seeing faster times in between new versions, and each new version is going to be a bigger increase. So we're going to be going into 8.8 after they have just delivered into the hands of customers mind-blowing new versions of the software that they already know to, like, they've already trained those. They have already seen those internally. They know exactly how they're going to perform. They just have to do all of their checks. And, you know, that's why Elon has been talking about 12.4 and 12.5 the way that he has. So if you think about those things and then you factor in, we'll go back to this, and then I'll go up. Right now, we are adding in this little area. So this is the free trial. Maybe it'll come back down a little bit, but we're adding over 10 million miles. It's like 10 and a half million miles every single day of new data. By 8.8, we will probably have put more. So, you know, if this is the launch of V12 here, that's under a billion miles total. We'll probably have a whole nother billion miles by 8.8. That's more data to train FSD off of than we have generated in the entire history of FSD as a company in the course of a few short months. Like, how do they not solve this problem when they have this much training compute, when they have this much data, when the progress of the software, like, just look at how much of a difference there is from version to version to version right now, and then say it's going to be moving several times faster than that next month, and then several times faster than that the month after that. Like, by the end of the year, it's almost inconceivable that it is not all the way solved.
Can I give a hot take on that? Because I agree with everything you're saying, Hans. But everybody keeps talking about this March of Nines and how it's, you know, going to take, you know, you hear things like, yeah, the first night or the last 5% will take as long as the first 95%. I don't agree with that at all. I think that's complete.
Yeah.
You agree with me, or you agree that it will take just as long?
I know it's shocking, but I agree with you.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The way I think about it is it's like a puzzle. Right, you start off with a puzzle and it takes some time, right? You figure out your edges and all that, but as you get closer and closer to finishing that puzzle, you move faster and faster and faster and faster, and the pieces just seem very obvious what you need. And it'll, like, there's always going to be something that has never been seen or captured. I don't even think that's that big of a deal, because it will be able to infer what to do. And even if there's that extremely rare edge case, think about this. It is that rare that we haven't been able to get it. So the odds of it happening are that rare.
I agree. I agree with that take. I think the he's throwing up the dubs.
Well, especially when this is what you're throwing at it. Like, when we're not going to asymptote, like, we're not going to stop progressing. When this 35,000 H100s worth of training compute is less than half of what we're going to have by the end of the year, like, we're going to have a whole nother step up, just like we see here again in the next 7 months. So, you know, if we're able to throw exponentially more resources at the problem, both in terms of data and in terms of compute, like, the likelihood that we slow down progress instead of accelerate is just people who don't understand what it takes to solve the problem that are saying that.
Yeah. I mean, so the way I would frame it, so I think the at the beginning of your question, it was like, can you, as people that actually experience the software on a daily basis, can you contextualize why you're so confident? So jumping from, if you bring that chart up again, Hans, so FSD V12, So when we got it first earlier this year, like you said, it was probably trained on the compute that was between the September and December timeframes, right? The one that we got in like March. That's where I think that compute is at, okay? And then there was multiple, there was 12.2, 12.3, 12.4, so on and so forth. But then the jump from that, from 11, a brand new way of doing it, was gigantic. So the amount of things 12 solved versus the previous version 11, which didn't use these training compute nearly as much as it could have, the amount of little things it solved was, the list was hundreds of items deep. Now, did it have some weird behaviors in some spots? Yes. But were those related to safety? No. They were related to how you would perform versus what the machine did. It's kind of like rating an Uber driver, or rating a, like, your mom driving the car. You're like, oh, I would have done that turn differently, so on and so forth. Okay. So the safety aspect of the system, to me, is already extremely, extremely, extremely good. And exactly. I mean, I don't have to say what you just said again. They're going to throw way more compute at it, way more data at it. And of course, yeah, it's, and that's why I think Elon's so adamant on getting people to jump on this damn thing on the call. They're like, you do not understand the company unless you experience V12. But I think more importantly, though, is that those same people, if they had exposure to 11, they would understand it even better. I don't think it's just V12 and it's going to blow your mind. It's like, if you were on this journey from the beginning and you understand the profound nature of what they've just achieved with V12, and the fact that they were the earliest level of compute, data, and fleet, and the fact that Elon just said they're going to start rolling this out in left-hand drive countries, like Germany, for example, and, you know, Spain is another left-hand drive country, and others, like, it's crazy. Yeah, it's going to be solved. I think that if has been out of the, and I've talked about this before, like, the if has been is not a discussion any longer, I don't think. And those that want to make it a discussion haven't tried the software. And if they said they've tried the software, they're either extremely unlucky, or they're lying.
Yeah, bold words.
Or they just don't understand machine learning. Like, and I think that's going to be a huge portion. Machine learning.
Sure.
Yeah.
I still don't know if I understand it. And
I don't even think people that work on it understand it.
But that's my point. Like, it's, you know, it's...
Oh.
Even Elon says, you know, like, you know, so much of it's a black box. But, or not Elon.
Oh, that was a humble brag. Okay, got it.
Kaparthy. No, what I was going to say, though, is Farzad, you actually bring up a good point for once. FSD 11, so I used to, because I was a cheap bastard and we had our cars paid off for us, so I didn't want to buy a Tesla. And so what I would do instead is I would get a Turo that had FSD on it, FSD beta, and, you know, twice a month I would rent a Turo with it and I would test it out. Right, because I'm like, I got so much money in this company that I need to be close to this, because watching videos was not enough. This was back like when it was still on, or maybe we'd just gotten out of 9 into 10. And then I got to a point where I was like, all right, I need to experience this on the day-to-day to really have a ground truth of what's happening. And we bought our Tesla, and we got, I think at the end of version 10, 10.6, 10.9. And, you know, looking back, it was sketchy, but it worked, is the thing. It worked, you know, but there was definitely safety things that would come up. Going through 11 is when I was like, oh, they're going to figure this out, you know, and to Farzad's point, I had a bet with my wife as well that they would solve it by the end of 2024. Same exact bet. And at that point, she thought 2 more years. When 12 came out, 11, the end of 11, it was like the nail has been put into the coffin but hasn't been hammered in. 12 came out, that wasn't just a hammer, it was a sledgehammer. And my wife was like, okay, I changed my mind. It's this year. right? It got to a point where my wife will not drive without it. She will not drive without it. And so seeing that evolution and being so close to it is why I have so much conviction. And I genuinely feel so bad for people who don't see this, because to me, it's so reminiscent of Amazon's just a book company and missing out everything with Amazon. Google's ran up so much, there's no way they can continue to run up. Microsoft, well, they're also so big, they're not gonna get bigger. And then all throughout from like 2010 to 2020, I mean, even Tesla, right? Throw them in there. But you missed this run with all these companies that people thought were either too big or what they were doing just won't work. And then we get into 2020 and you're like, oh man, if only I would have known. You know, it's like, I feel like you're there again. Like,
can I tell you a story? Yeah, because I think it's going to jump right on that. Go ahead. You want to make a point? Yeah.
No. I was going to try to be funny.
Go ahead. Let's see. I'll put you on the spot here. Okay. We should do like an open mic hour or something. We'll practice our chops and bore everybody to death. Okay. So go ahead.
I got nothing to say. I'm listening. Okay. To the story. Here we go.
So one of my really good friends, he was one of my groomsmen, actually. His name's Brandon. Shout out, Brandon, if you're listening to this. He's been somebody who has been following the Tesla story. And he, you know, I remember back in 2018, 2017, that time period, he was, you know, I was all in on Tesla. I still am all in on Tesla and my stocks anyway. And the overarching premise from him was, are you sure you want to do this? Like, I would hear this from so many people. I'm like, I work at the company. I've been investing in it from 2012. I understand it better than most. I'm super close to it. This is a fundamental shift in how our vehicles are going to be done. They're working on too many things. It's impossible to ignore. I just can't not do this. Like, I've done all the check and balances. I exposed myself to the downside. I just can't not do this. You know, luckily for me, it paid off. And now, a little bit after that, he was like, damn, I should listen to it. I'm like, listen, do your own research. I'm glad you didn't, right? And now, for the last year or so, he was kind of like, I was talking to him about the autonomy thing. I'm like, this thing, man, this V12 thing that's going to come out and the neural nets and this version 11, man, I'm telling you, bro, like, this is, you know, pretty special. And you just check it out. I'm not saying go out and buy it. I'm just saying, like, check it out. And now his tone has shifted. So now his tone is much more like, so you have this company that's in a really good financial position. They have a ton of cash. They have little to no debt. They're the only EV maker that's making a profit. People clearly want Teslas. They're doing it better than anybody else. Nobody else is doing it. And his autonomy thing seems kind of legit. And so he's been one of those guys that's like, you know, he sends me a text every week. He's like, I added more Tesla. And this is somebody that was just not even paying attention to the story before. But what shifted was he's seeing it more from the standpoint of a company that has good financial footing. That the numbers are there for him to justify this investment thesis, right? And I think what's interesting about what you just said is that you've seen a shift from somebody who's had firsthand experience trying out the software, the full self-driving software. But I'm seeing the shift as well from people like him just viewing the company through a different light. We have people like, this is going to be a special video on the channel. It's a little bit of a plug, and I'll keep the secret. Somebody that's very well known on YouTube that I think very few people thought would buy Tesla is now heavily considering a Tesla because of the value proposition. There's another person that has done this too, that has an even bigger following on other platforms that I won't mention, that's now considering buying a Tesla. So it's like, there's a shift that's occurring, I think, with not just the self-driving thing, but I think the entire story that's pointing the mainstream towards, hey, this is actually legit. And the self-driving piece is going to catch everybody by absolute surprise. It's going to blow everyone's mind. They're going to be like, oh, I bought this thing because Consumer Reports said it's the cheapest car to own over 10 years. And then they'll be like, hey, try out Full Self-Driving for a month, you know, 12.5. And they're going to turn it on. They're going to be like, what the fuck just happened? What the fuck just happened? That's where Tesla's going. But the stock will not go up until it shows up on the P&L.
I have similar stories. Like, I don't know if, do you guys get this? Like, every time I have friends who are starting to discover the Tesla as an investment, here comes earnings. I start getting these texts. What do you think Tesla's going to do? Do you think it's going to be up after earnings? Do you think I should buy some now or later? And I always have the same comments to all of them. Like, I don't know. I don't really care. I just buy every week. That's all I do. And they're like, well, I think it's gonna go down really hard after earnings, and then it's gonna go up, you know, in a few months. So I'm probably gonna wait till after earnings. And this exact same text conversation happened. Sorry, Ryan, I'm putting you on blast. And I'm just sitting here, I'm just telling them, like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just gonna buy this week, and I'll buy next week, and I'll buy the week after that. I don't really care. It doesn't matter if I buy at 130, if I buy at 160, you know, when we're at 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, who's going to care? Like, it's going to be irrelevant. And but it's funny. Like, I get all these, it's always like right around earnings or if Tesla's down on a day. You don't know how many Slack messages I get from people saying, like, hey, what's going on with Tesla? Like, what's whatever? I'm like, I don't know. Like, buy more. I don't know what else to tell you. Buy more or don't be in the company. I have friends who have gotten into Tesla, and they started getting into it like at 215, 200, and they're huge Bitcoin people. They have so much Bitcoin. And now they're like, man, I'm not so happy with Tesla right now. I mean, I love the car. Don't mean it's not the car. My stock's down. I'm like, where was that energy with Bitcoin? You didn't have any problem with that conviction in Bitcoin, did you? And they're like, yeah, I know. I'm like, all right, well, just, you know, keep yourself honest. But it's funny to see, just the sentiments changing.
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Is like, it you guys feel that too, right? It's not just like me that's like seeing this giant shift. Not just like friends or whatever. Like slow. Like just something happened this week. It feels like something happened this week.
I think that point where, you know, the people that feel like they're smarter than everybody else all have consensus about, oh, you know, we're going to sell our shares going into earnings, and then there's going to be terrible earnings, then we're going to buy back more. And then, you know, oh, after earnings, they're down 10% or 14 or 15%. You know, if they invest back into it, they've lost that number of shares. You know, I think that's a good sign. And then you've got that, you've got Ron Barron saying like the bottom is in, who, you know, he's somebody that I have an incredible amount of respect for, like the best buy and hold active manager on Wall Street. It's fun to see. And then, you know, Galley's back, like excited about buying again. The feeling, I would agree. I feel that same feeling of energy moving. And like I said, I think the likelihood that we start seeing some good earnings here that are surprisingly good, I think it's inevitable that it's not that far around the corner. And so it's a good place for me to try and load up or to, you know, play with a little bit of margin, or not margin, leaps, some options. Yeah.
What are you thinking? What are you thinking about leaps? Like, what's, I mean, if you want to talk about it, but like, I'm just interested in how you're seeing this from a risk reward when it comes to entry, because the entry is going to be everything with the leap.
Yeah. I think, well, so I'm not like, that's the reason for the leap is to try and
time,
have lots of room. Yeah. Lots of room for error. What I've been looking at is trying to buy in, like, I have a set dollar amount that I want to spend. And so I'm just exploring different, like a year out, you know, should I look at the June 25s? Should I look at the June 26s? Should I look at the December 25s? So I look at the different expirations, and then I kind of look through the prices and see what price kind of matches an amount that I have to spend. And then I'm looking at the probability lab and interactive brokers, and I'm seeing which ones does the market think are more likely versus less likely. And I'm trying to find the biggest arbitrage between what I think is going to happen and what I think the market is pricing in. And yeah, I haven't made a decision yet on which one I'm going for, but my guess is that it seems like the longer dated ones that are higher prices are ones that I think there's a bigger spread between what the market is pricing in and what I think is likely. Because to me, if we see a re-rating, it's not going to be a small re-rating. Like the difference between $300 in June of 25 and $500 in June of 26, like if we see the one, I think we'll see the other. Because it has to be driven by structural changes in the company. It's like if the structural shift happens that I think is going to happen, then, and if I can get a, you know, more option contracts for the 2026 version at a higher price, then that's probably the direction that I would go.
So you think for this re-rating, do you think profits have to flow to the bottom line?
I think that will be the big re-rating, yeah. Like, I think we can have small bump, but I'm talking about a re-rating that takes us to multiple trillions of dollars in market cap.
Okay, so you think that happens between now and 2026, roughly, assuming you do like a 2-year leap?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that that's very feasible. Like, it could be that I'm a little bit too early. Like, it may be just behind that, but that's what I'm willing to put a little skin in the game on.
What do you think, Farzi God? I'm trying stuff here. I'm trying things out. But do you think? I mean, all right, forget about the stock price. But when do you think things start flowing to the bottom line to become meaningful? You know, for the market and, you know, the way you keep putting it. Do you think that's next year, 2026, 2027? I mean, game this out for us.
I think FSD fleet revenue, and so that should start showing up by the end of this year, but it's not going to be in large numbers because the fleet size is still relatively small, and the number of jurisdictions are. Go ahead.
Can you define what you mean by fleet? Do you mean like our vehicles, lease vehicles Tesla owns, or okay?
Yeah, like so the cars they sell to consumers that are 3YSX and Cybertruck. I think by the end of the year there might be maybe 2 million cars on FSD of the entire fleet by the end of this year. And if you have 2 million cars on FSD on FSD, and say a portion of them, I don't know, let's say half of those are doing the monthly subscription of $99 per month, right? So that's 1 million. So that's 99 million per month. So that's 300 million per quarter, 1.2 billion per year, right?
That's crazy.
Of just FSD. But what multiple is that going to get? Right? That's the thing. It should get, but that's, I mean, if crazy. If what?
That's crazy. Just those numbers.
Yeah.
That's the starting point.
I know. Yeah, so if that gets 100 PE, so if that gets 100 price earnings multiple from the market, that's $100 billion market cap, right? So in theory, if FSD, if those are the numbers that come in by the end of the year and the market decides to price it in at a PE of 100, that's only, and I say only, but it's 20% more market cap. That's not that big of a deal, truly. But going into next year, that number could double or more. And then going into the following year, that number could double again or more. And that's where you have this compounding factor. So I don't think realistically speaking, given how the market has been acting for the last few, for the last couple of years, this is just, again, not investment or financial advice. It's just me speaking out loud. I think the giant re-rating where Tesla goes multi-trillion, so say, you know, $2, $3, $4, $5 trillion market cap, especially as they ramp up energy as well. I don't think that happens realistically until, like, you know, like the way I have it in my head, again, this is just how I'm conceptualizing the story. I think 2 trillion by the end of 2026, 5 trillion by the end of the decade, maybe more. And then the bot, depending when the bot launches, then that's that blows the roof off completely. But that's how I'm thinking about this story. Yeah, I think 10x by the end of the decade is likely.
Well, that just that's okay. So, Hans, like your point on like leaps is interesting because there's so many things, like so many potential catalysts, right? And I'm not like, forget about the Tesla story, right? Or the technology side of it. You have Elon's comp plan, right? That if you buy a Leap, I mean, that alone could send Tesla stock back to 200. And all of a sudden you bought a Leap at these prices, you're already in the money probably at that point, right? So there's a good chance of that. Then whatever happens on 8/8, and then if we are right and it launches at the end of 2024, then whatever happens in 2025, if it starts to flow down to the bottom line the way Farzad and Gary Black, you know, think it needs to happen to really start being meaningful. And that's just Tesla, not even really talking about the technology. Then zoom out, think of any interest rate cuts, think of any of that $7 trillion on the sidelines start to come in. And if they start seeing that profit come in and they start to see, okay, well, this is before it's truly scaled, this is how much we're making, we can actually model this out now. Where do you think a lot of that $7 trillion could go to? I mean, it really starts to get, and then you're like, okay, well, they did it in cars. They've done the EVs. Elon's done rockets. Like, at what point is it like, okay, we're going to stop thinking this guy just won't do it and he's going to do humanoids, right? Like, I feel like there's just so many like potential things that could just set that off. But with leaps or options in general, there's always a timing thing component to it. So it's interesting.